in case you don't know what we're going to talk about, the subject that we're going to talk about is on the screen, which is faith. So we're going to talk about faith, and so as part of this, I put together a PowerPoint presentation in order to hopefully give you a clue as to the subject that we're going to cover today. So to begin with, this sermon came about as a result of a discussion between a couple of people over faith and hope. And what's the difference between faith and hope? So do you know, could you tell me what the difference is between faith and hope? Well, yes, they're spelled differently, pronounced differently, but what's the difference? Could you define it? As you think about the subject of hope, what's the definition of hope? That's an easy one to define as we go through. Hope is the realistic expectation. Hope is realistic expectation. It's something that realistically can happen and that you're hoping for. So it's an easy definition, and we'll hit hope again here a little later on. So as you look in the Bible gives you a definition of faith. How many of you know where the Bible defines faith? Okay, well, it's actually, interestingly, it is, it gives you that definition. It's found in one location. But as you look at that particular definition, which is found in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, which defines it, faith is, and defines it. But a lot of people have looked at that verse and still don't exactly know what faith is. So they look at it, but there are parts of it that are a little bit difficult to understand. So what does it mean? Does that definition clarify in your mind? You know, the definition in Hebrews 11:1, does it clarify everything for you, or is there more clarification that you need? The fundamental question is, what is faith and how does it differ from hope? And we'll seek to define that. So today's sermon is going to be a one scripture sermon, so you're not going to have to spend a lot of time turning in your Bible. And we're going to stay in Hebrews 11:1. And look at that and focus totally on that one place. And my hope is that when we're finished, you'll have one of those once and for all places to go for a definition of the word faith. So the goal is that you would understand what faith is, you'd be able to define it, you'd understand the difference between faith and hope, and it would all fall into place for you, and you'll leave with something that's going to be helpful to you. Now, when you look at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, Hebrews 11, verse 1 is a translation. So it was originally written in Greek, and the challenge that every translator has to face is, how do you translate accurately from Greek to English, the English Bible? How do we do that? How do we accurately go from Greek to English? And that's the challenge you face in translating from one language to another. It's always been the challenge, and it was a challenge for those who were translating the Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 from the original Greek into English. And there are some problems as you look at translation. And there are problems that are common to every effort to translate. The person who translated Hebrews 1 from the original language to English faced that very challenge, as does every translator. And everyone involved in translating from one language to another knows that words do not move automatically from one language to another. I mean, when I started being involved with Spanish, I thought, well, I can just take the English and it'll automatically translate over to Spanish. Not so. And so you had to learn how to get the context right, get everything in the right word order, and all of those kinds of things as you were translating from one language to another. And and words we have in English, we have them and we're familiar with them, but somebody translating, they have to figure out what's the right word to use. And that's a challenge. And if you've ever gone to a feast site where they translate from the language of the country to English, you recognize that, because the translator sometimes will translate it and it's accurate, but it's not the word we would use as English speakers. So it comes across a little bit, I can tell that they're not, English is not their first language. So we have to recognize that, and it's challenging to translate from one language to another. So that the translators seek to find words that will best fit. What's going to be the best way to convey the idea that's being expressed in this particular passage? And we also know that words have different meanings. So in English, you've got multiple meanings for multiple words, and the same thing is true in Greek. So you're trying to pick out one that really spells it out in a way that your audience is going to be able to understand. Another element to add complication is that a translator's job is to find the closest match to the meaning of the word he's translating, not the closest match to the intent of the writer. And that's something you have to recognize. Sometimes people will translate trying to understand the intent of the writer. Well, they lived in the first century. How do you understand the intent? That's pretty hard to do. So that's definitely a leap of faith here, and hard to do. So what we seek to do is try to convey the idea that's being put forward and give the best word for it, so that we on this side of the translation as English speakers can understand what he's saying. So it's challenging to do that. And sometimes the words they use, you know, as you know well, we have used the King James Version as the most closest to the scriptures. And the King James Version is fine, but if you haven't recognized it, the King James English from 1611 is the English that's used. And I don't use that. I don't use thou and thee. Do you? No, we don't use that language anymore, and some of the words are antiquated. So we try to use a more modern translation that expresses the same idea in words that we as more modern speakers can understand. You also have to realize that as you're translating, you're trying to convey complex ideas. You know, that word that's used in the translation of Hebrews 11:1 is expressing a very complex idea known as faith. And so they're seeking to translate the what was written, and sometimes that's a challenge. That's why, so you're trying to convey complex ideas, and that's why translations like the Living Bible and others exist, where the author said, well, I want to assume I know the intent of the writer. So they are in what they've written in the translation there, the Living Bible. It's not a translation, it's a transliteration. But they've said, I know what he was trying to convey, and and you'll find that conveyed in their particular approach to the scriptures. With complex ideas, we're not always sure that the listener and reader is going to understand us, because the idea is complex and abstract. So we may have to say it in more than one way. So you'll say it one way and then maybe try it in another way, because you want them to understand. I remember a teacher I always valued when I was taking a college biology course. If somebody asked him a question, he would seek to answer the question in a way that we would understand. And he would sometimes translate in one way, and then he would immediately translate in another, because he was trying to get us to understand the concept he was trying to get across. So Anyway, you've got these different things that come up as you're seeking to translate the Bible or any other writing from one language to the other. So let's look at the definition that the Bible gives us. So the Bible gives us a definite definition of what faith is. The one place to go that tells you what faith is found in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. And there it says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." And that translation is accurate. It is accurate. And but do you fully understand what's being conveyed by those words? Or do you have, well, I kind of understand it, but there's a little bit of it I don't understand. So the question is, if that doesn't do it for you, then where do you go? How do you resolve it if you don't fully understand the idea that's being conveyed? So faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So there, as you think about Hebrews 11:1, there is scarcely any other verse of the New Testament more important than this, because it says this is faith. And the goal that the original writer had was to convey to you as a follower of Jesus Christ what faith is. It's the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And unfortunately, I've always, not fully comprehended that. I've looked it up and done it in different ways. And so it's not really spelled it out perfectly in a way that I understand that perfectly. So the question is, as you think about Hebrews 11:1, where do you go to try to find a better definition? How do you do that? How would you find a better definition? And if Hebrews 11:1 is all you have and you don't understand it, you're probably not going to understand faith. So as you look at this particular subject, Hebrews 11:1, you find that there are two phrases. And the way we're going to address this is we're going to look at those two phrases. The first phrase is, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for." So we're going to focus on that particular phrase to begin with and seek to understand it, and then we'll move on to the second phrase. So as you look at this verse, as I said, there are two phrases, and we're going to do them one by one. And what's the sticking point in this particular phrase for most people? The sticking point is the word substance. Substance. So what does substance mean? Well, we sort of know what that is. We've all heard of substance abuse. So we know that there's some substance that people are abusing, people are using inappropriately. So we do understand that to some degree, but do we understand fully what's being conveyed there? So one of the ways that we have to be able to figure this out is by comparison. So there we have the New King James and the King James versions of the Bible, which are all translations from the Greek. And there are other translations that you can go to and look at them, and they will help you define the word. And you can look at how they translate it and compare one with another. So I have some of these for you. And the first one is, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for," which is that first phrase translated in the King James Version and the New King James. So, okay, we're back to square one. That wasn't so clear. So where do we go? Where might we go next? Well, we can go to the American Standard Version, and there it says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for." So you had substance, and now you have assurance. So only one word is changed in the American Standard Version, and that is assurance of things hoped for. So I can understand that better than substance, but did you realize that substance expresses the idea of assurance? I didn't know that. I would not draw that conclusion from looking at the word substance. But the translators have looked at it and felt that assurance was a good translation of the word in the Greek. So then we have a third translation, and this is from the International Standard Version. And it says, now faith is the assurance that what we hope for will come about. The assurance that what we hope for will come about. I think that as you look at that translation, there's assurance and that what we hope for will come about, which to me is more understandable. But what you've done, what you're doing is you're comparing these different translations in order to come to a conclusion. And then a final one is the Contemporary English Version, and it says, faith makes us sure of what we hope for. Faith makes us sure of what we hope for. So that's faith. We are made sure of what we hope for. And so if you made a merger of the different translations, you could come up with this. So you put them together, and faith makes us sure that what we hope for will come about. So to have faith, then we can be sure that what we hope for will come about. So to me, that's a better translation than I can understand what it says there, that it's the substance that's hard for me to understand. It's substance of things hoped for. So that gives me a little bit more information and I'm a little bit better able to understand. You can go to a word study Bible called Vincent's Word Studies. And it says, faith apprehends as a real fact what is not revealed by the senses. Faith apprehends as a real fact what is not revealed to the senses. So faith apprehends. Now, what does that mean? We're back to the question of substance. But I understand apprehend. So we apprehend criminals. That's probably the way that we're most familiar with the word. So basically, faith captures as a real fact what is not revealed to the senses. So that's apprehends is a good word and probably applicable, but that still makes me wonder, what does it mean? As we walk through the various translations and Bible helps, Vincent's Word Studies captures the essence best of all. And you know, apprehends may not cut it for you. So another thing that you can do, there are other words that would help to make it clear, and that's found in faith, grasp as a real fact that what is not revealed to the senses. So faith grasped. You know, we can hold on to something. It's something that we can hold on to. So faith grasped as a real fact, what is not revealed to the senses. So we may not get it on a certain level, but faith helps us to grasp what is not revealed to the senses. So you can't see it, you can't touch it, you can't taste it, you can't smell it. It's something that you cannot sense, but it is something that we can grasp as God gives us his faith to be able to understand what God is trying to get across to us. Let's look at a quote from a Bible scholar by the name of Albert Barnes. And Barnes examined this particular subject of faith and made some comments on it, which are interesting because of some of the things that he brings out in his comment. Albert Barnes says, it seems to me, therefore, that the word here has reference to something which imparts reality. So it helps you to understand reality. In the view of the mind, to those things which are not seen, which serves to distinguish them from those things which are unreal and elusive. Barnes goes on to say, it is what enables us to feel and act as if they were real, or which causes them to exert an influence over us if we saw them. Faith does this on all other subjects as well as religion. So faith is applicable to religion as well as to other issues as well. It's not just a religious word. Faith is involved in a lot of other things, as we'll see. So I don't know about you, but even though I think this is the best of the definitions that I have seen, I'm not immediately comfortable with the word apprehend. Apprehend also means understand. As I said, it means different things, grasp or perceive, and grasp is the one that I think works best for me. So faith grasps as a real fact what is not revealed to the senses. So you pick the one that works best for you and hold on to it. A thing to put in your mind about this subject is faith is generic. So this is another way of expressing that faith doesn't just apply to religion. As Barnes says, faith, when you really have it, captures this essence in all areas as well as religion. Faith, when you really have it, captures this essence in all areas as well as religion. And Barnes gives an illustration. He says in his commentary, a belief that there is such a place as London or Calcutta. How many of you have been to London? Many of you have. How about Calcutta? Most have not. But is there a real place called Calcutta? I've never been there, but I trust that it does exist. And he's writing back quite a few years ago, where not very many people from India had been to London, or people from England had been to Calcutta. So these people had heard about it, but they had not been there. All they had done is hear about it. And so when you hear these things conveyed, faith causes us to act as if they were reality. You hear about Calcutta. Is there a Calcutta? I think so. So if I wanted to go there, I could make arrangements to do so. I've just heard that it's there, and I'm going to get on a plane, which, as we'll see, is an act of faith, and fly to India, to the city of Calcutta. And then it will be there in reality. But before I go, it's something that I've just heard about and I believe in. A belief, you can have, he goes on to say, a belief that money may be made in certain undertakings leads people to act as if this were so. So if you want to make money, you might invest, you might purchase a CD. And when you purchase the CD, there's the promise that you will have more money in the end. So you purchase that CD and there is that promise, but you haven't seen the money. You don't know that that's real until they're counting the money that you've made into your hand. But you trust that they're going to pay me 25% on my CD. That's called wishful thinking at this point. So anyway, but you trust that they're going to pay you a certain interest rate and that at the end of the term, they will give you the money. You're acting in faith. I can invest with this bank or this particular house that deals with stocks and all of that. I can deal with them and I can set this up and I can make money. You also have these things that are out there that allow us to be able to have faith in them and that it will work out as offered. As long as the faith continues, whether it be well-founded or not, it gives all the force of reality to what is believed. We feel and act just as if it were so, or if we saw the object before our eyes. This, I think, is the clear meaning here. We do not see the things of eternity. For instance, we don't see God, do we? But we have faith that he exists. And we don't, you know, is there a heavenly throne in heaven? We believe that, but how many of you have seen it? You have faith that it's real. And you have, are there angels? How many of you have seen angels? I haven't. And so I really don't want to. And it might be a little heavy. But anyway, we know that angels exist because we trust that what the Bible is telling us is true. So we have faith in a lot of different things that aren't necessarily religious things. And we might give you an assignment for between this Sabbath and next to take note of the ways in which you act in faith. Write them down. Write every one of them down. And I challenge you to do that. And the problem with that is that you act in faith all the time. And when you begin writing them down, you'll note, well, I'm acting in faith all the time with regularity, and there's no way I can keep up with all the ways that I act in faith throughout each and every day. So it's something that's very hard for us to do because of the frequency with which we act in faith. And you probably don't think about it because it's so common, some ways that we act in faith. For instance, I mentioned flying, so if you choose to take a flight someplace, you're acting in faith because you're trusting that the plane will be there on time, that you can board the plane, and that plane is going to take off, which is a little hard to understand. This heavy object is going to pick up enough speed to take off. And then that plane is going to take off into the wild blue yonder, and it's going to end up wherever we happen to be going, Philadelphia, New York, or Calcutta, wherever we happen to be going, that plane is actually going to get there. We trust that the plane's going to hold up and make the flight. We trust that the pilot knows what he's doing, and that he's going to get us into wherever it is that we're supposed to go. So flying is an act of faith. You get on that plane trusting that it's all going to work out. Consider the telephone. You know, most of us have phones, and so we have this phone that's a computer. And we trust that if we punch those numbers in, that when we finish punching them in and hit the little green button on my phone, that call is going to go through wherever it may be. It's going to call somebody close to home or somebody far from home, but they're going to answer. Now, do you understand exactly how that works? It's a magical thing. I punch the numbers and it works. And you know, you learn to send pictures, you learn to do text, you learn to do all sorts of things with it that are just absolutely amazing, but you trust that if I spend $1,200, $1,500, whatever it is for an iPhone, it's actually going to work. Isn't that right? And amazingly, it does. Thankfully, it works because spending $1,500, I expect it to work. So it's an amazing thing, and you have faith in it, don't you? So it's just one thing that is part of our world. And, you know, I said that you're doing this all the time. Do you want to keep track of how many times you express your faith in this in the phone? That could occupy most of your time. Also, think of a microwave. How many of you know how it works? Some of us may, but microwaves work, and we put a, maybe we want to warm up a cup of coffee, maybe we want to warm up some food, and we put it in there, and we punch in the numbers, and you know what? Punch that start button, and it starts, and it begins to make this noise, and by the time it's over, and the alarm goes off, well, it's warmed up. So it's not something we fully comprehend, but it's something that we have faith in that it's going to work. And it's something that you find all throughout life. And none of this is religious. Every day you're expressing faith in various things that are physical. Nothing wrong with that, but that's how we operate in life. You and I live by faith so many times in the week when we can't count them. So challenging you to do that would be more challenging than most of us would be able to endure. So we understand something about faith and that we operate by faith all the time. And I mean, you have to conclude we live by faith. We really, truly do, even if it's not in a religious sense. But what the writers of the Bible are seeking for us to do is to live by faith in a religious sense. So let's now go to this part two, the next phase of Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. The next phrase is, now faith is the evidence of things not seen. Faith is the evidence of things not seen. Now most of us can understand the word evidence, which is the hardest word in that particular part of the phrase. Evidence is something we can understand because we've all seen crime shows and they convict the criminals because of evidence. So we all know, have some familiarity with that. So faith offers us evidence of things we can't see. Faith offers us evidence of things we can't see. And it's easier for us to understand, but the word evidence is a little more difficult and challenging. So like we did with the first phrase, let's look at some comparisons. So the Revised Standard Version and the American Standard Version write of Hebrews 11:1, the conviction of things not seen. The conviction of things not seen. So conviction, does it do it for you and help you to understand? You know, conviction is, we understand that we are to be convicted about our beliefs, convicted about the things that God has relayed to us. You also have another translation, the International Standard Version. It says, faith is the certainty that what we cannot see exists. That what we cannot see exists. So, that I can't see it, but it's true, it does exist. And then the Contemporary English Version says, proof of what we cannot see. So faith is proof of what we cannot see. So we have evidence, the proving of things, conviction, certainty that gives us proof. The clearest definition in my personal opinion is faith is the certainty that what we cannot see exists. So faith is the certainty that what we cannot see exists. So to me, that's the definite part, that's the way of defining it that stands out to me. And why do I feel this way? Because of the connection of faith with certainty. And that certainty is connected to something I can't sense with my sense of smell and taste and feeling and seeing. But I'm certain that it exists. And it's a certainty that allows us to fly, allows us to turn on the TV, to drive, to use a cell phone. and we live with the greatest degree of faith of any generation because we have so many things that we have faith in that they're all going to work. So, moving on, Barnes also wanted to deal with this second phrase, and he has something to say about it, beginning in Hebrews. He's talking about Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. And he says, "But when a man who has never seen it believes that there is such a place as London, his belief in the numerous testimonies respecting it, which he has heard and read, is to his mind a good and rational proof of its existence. And he would act on the belief without hesitation." Think about Jesus Christ. How many of you have seen him? None of us have. None of us have seen him. So what do we rely on? We trust that those people who testified to his existence and his reality, we trust that they're telling us the truth, don't we? We trust that they're telling us the truth. So that's what we're talking about here. As you look at that definition of faith, that these men testified to what they had seen and experienced and related to us. So the author of Hebrews gave two illustrations in order to make his point. As I said in Hebrews 11, 1, it's made up of two phrases. And we went through how do we wrap our heads around the substance, and then we've gone through the subject of evidence. The author did like many of us do, he tried to define it in a more accessible way. The first point is faith sees as real what cannot be apprehended by the senses. So we see it as real, something that we can't sense. And the second point is faith is certain something is real that we cannot see. So the illustration, we're illustrating the same point. We can have connection and confidence in these things. Now, going back to the beginning of the sermon, we brought up the question, what is faith and how does it differ from hope? We've dealt with hope, and hope, as I said at the outset, will take very little time to define. Hope is realistic expectation. You realistically expect what you hope for to become a reality. We have hope or expectation concerning the prophetic timeline. Don't we? Don't we believe? Don't we have hope in the prophetic timeline that it's ultimately going to become a reality? Just as an example, one day Christ will return. We hope that that's going to happen, don't we? It's a hope that we have. He's going to return to this earth, and he's going to set up the kingdom, a kingdom that will last 1,000 years to begin with, and then carry on from there throughout eternity. We trust that that's going to be a reality. The Bible has laid that out for us, and because it's laid out for us, we believe it's reality, that it is going to come to pass, don't we? But I've never seen the kingdom. The best I've got is I've heard about it. Do you know everything about the kingdom? No, we don't. That's why we go to the feast and we're reminded of certain things about the kingdom that are revealed in the scriptures. And we know that one day all of those things that we've heard about are going to become realities. But they're not reality yet. They're just hopes and promises that we can have faith in. The key point about Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, in Hebrews 11, verse 1, two examples were used by the writer to help the reader understand faith. And two examples are not a case of the same thing being said again. They're two different examples. And one way is understanding how faith relates to things hoped for, And a second way to understand faith is to point out that it deals with things not seen, things that we can't see, that we just believe that they exist. Going back to Albert Barnes said the following, quote, talking about Hebrews 11, verse 1. He says, in an extended sense, the things hoped for are the resurrection of the body. How many of you hope for that? I think we all do, don't we? We all hope to be resurrected. It's a realistic expectation. And why is that? Because God promised it. God promised that we're going to be resurrected. It's a hope. The new heavens and the new earth are promised. Are they going to? They're not reality yet, but they're coming. It's what the Bible tells us. So, do we believe that the new heavens and the new earth are going to be established? When we reach the end of Revelation, what do we expect to happen? There will be a new heavens and a new earth and a completely different world that we've not experienced. The introduction of believers into the heavenly country is what's going to take place, and we would see that as them being welcomed into the kingdom of God. So we simply say the introduction of the believers into the kingdom and the possession of eternal glory. So what does that mean? As you look in the scriptures and you read what it says that the people of God are going to shine with the brightness of the sun. Now, stop and think about that for a minute. That means you, as an individual part of the kingdom of God, are going to shine with the brightness of the sun. That's pretty bright. That's pretty bright, but that's what it says. So as you, as a member of God's family, are going to shine with the brightness of the sun. So I would say that's going to illuminate a lot. So God is going to illuminate the earth through Jesus Christ, and we're all going to contribute to that. Nobody's going to be walking in darkness in that time, like the world walks in our time. And we trust that that's all going to be a reality. We trust that that's going to be a reality. And we firmly believe in these things, and that's why God says, I want you to go to the feast. Because God is going to rehearse various things that pertain to what is coming, and he wants our faith to be renewed. He wants our faith to be renewed. So when we return home, we're renewed in that faith, and renewed in that belief, in that faith that it is going to become a reality, and we can live in hope that that's going to come to pass. Just imagine if you, for whatever reason, cease to believe in it. So if you cease to believe in these things, where are you going to go? What do you have faith in? What do you have faith in then? And life becomes pretty empty because there is nothing else. So you've been given the greatest vision of what is to take place, and we develop a faith in it that this is all going to be a reality. But I've never seen it. I've never been a part of it. But it is to come. So our hope and our expectation is that one day these things are going to come to pass. We've not seen them, but we know that they're coming. So, concluding here, the bottom line is faith is the ability to see God's promises as real. What he has promised is real. And to act and live and conduct ourselves accordingly, even though none of our senses confirm them. So God says, you know what? It's worth you sacrificing to ultimately be a part of my family. I've not been a part of it. You haven't. And the only part of God's family that we know of is Jesus Christ. But we're promised that. So as we go through life, hopefully this helps you to better understand what faith is. And hope and faith are to shape our conduct. So God has given you those things because he wants you to have faith in them and hope in them, because it's going to impact your conduct. So how are you going to live? God said, I want you to live in faith based upon what I'm teaching you, because it's preparing you for when it's a reality. It's preparing you to, you live by faith now, and it's not a reality in the sense that it's actually here, but it's a reality in your mind because you have faith in it that it is going to be accomplished. And what does God tell us as a basic motivation for life? He says in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7, for we walk by faith. We walk by faith. We can't see it. We can't touch it. We can't taste it. None of us have. But we know it's going to be a reality. So we walk by faith. And it motivates our conduct, because at the end of it all, what we've had faith in will be a reality. It's coming, and we can be a part of it. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of an insight into the subject of faith. Hopefully you find it of value. If you'd like to have the PowerPoint, you're more than welcome to have it, and I can send it to you. Just drop me an email, and I'll send it to you. So please have a great remainder of the day. And thank you all for being here and for your attention. You have to make. So please have a great week ahead, and we'll see you here next Sabbath.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.